All right. Hello, everyone. This is Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing, and I'm talking today to Grant Connolly about finding peace of mind. And Grant has an amazing background. He's been doing this for 20 years now, but his background is actually in computers and telecommunications. And Grant was living, as many people do, unfortunately, a very unhappy life. He was dealing with a lifetime of abuse and trauma, and he actually developed for himself, and you're going to see the computer background here, what he calls the Z-point process. So literally, he took a look at all that was going on inside and approached it as a program, and has been, as I said, has been doing this for 20 years. It's an amazing process. He's taken me through that as well. So I'm really delighted to have him here to share with us today. Grant, are you there?
I'm here, Tim.
Awesome. Wow. It's not everybody who invents a system of healing themselves. So how did you come to do that?
Well, I was, as I said earlier, I was very unhappy. I had a lifetime of trauma. I was beaten regularly, and it happens to many people in life these days, but I wanted to get past it, and I was unhappy, as I said. So I tried using EFT. I tried using a number of different processes, TAT, Tapas Acupressure Technique, and they all work. They all work wonderfully. It's just it didn't resonate with me. And I took each of those two techniques as far as I could take them, and I came across something called BSFF. It was called Be Set Free Fast by a fellow named Dr. Larry Nims. And it was based on an idea that you could install into the subconscious mind a healing program and then use a special word, an activating word. And I thought that was a wonderful idea, but it didn't resonate with me, and it was too complicated. It was like way too complicated. So using the ideas behind computers, which I thought was the way the subconscious worked and still do, I created my own system, which is extremely simple, very straightforward, and it places you into a deeply peaceful meditative state very quickly, as you discovered, I believe. And so I've been going ever since, and it has evolved as time has gone on, and it's literally taken me around the world. I've been literally around the world a number of times, and it's quite something. I'm enjoying myself.
So talk a little bit more about, for people who may be struggling with this concept, how is the subconscious mind like a computer?
Well, because everything seems to be stored there. We have, or the subconscious mind accesses all of our experiences in whatever way, all of our memories, all of the beliefs that we believe to be true about life. Everything is stored in our subconscious or unconscious mind. And if we want to access something, we can literally access it through that. And it's a simple process, quite literally, to change what we believe to be true about ourselves, and either through accessing the information directly, or changing it through hypnosis or affirmations or all kinds of different things. So I took a real hard look at it and came up with my own approach that actually works. And it's based upon the idea that I can do whatever I really set my mind to do if I set it up in the right way, if that makes sense to you.
It does. It reminds me a little bit of Byron Katie's work about really looking at beliefs that are untrue. Would that be okay?
Go ahead. Sorry.
That's all right. So I think a lot of our listeners, too, might be really intrigued with this idea. Can do anything you want to do.
If I can expand on that a sec, I found that when we have a difficult feeling, it's based upon a belief that literally isn't true. And when we change the way what we believe to be true about our lives, we change the way we respond to situations and circumstances that happen in our life. And if you have really hard or difficult feelings about something, if you release your attachment to that feeling, suddenly the belief that that feeling is based upon, and they're all based upon feelings, changes. So if you have a really really difficult feelings about certain situations or circumstances or relationships, then when you change that feeling, when you change how that feels to you, you again change the belief it's based upon from one of a limitation to one of expansion or saying yes to life itself, if that makes sense.
It does.
So that's all we do. We just simply change how we feel about something, and that changes what we believe to be true about that something. And everything changes because of it.
Yeah, I think that commonly we assume that it's backwards. Things happen, and then we feel about them.
Yeah.
And so if I'm understanding this correctly, you're saying actually the other way around, we feel about things. And that sets in motion what happens.
Yeah, essentially, that's true. And when we feel restricted in some way, when we have a belief that says life is this way and life is hard and then we die. There's a great one. And a very simple belief. Life is hard and that we have to suffer and that we have to work hard to earn money. Well, That too is a belief, believe it or not. Some people don't have to work so hard and they earn lots of money. So it depends how you feel about things. And when you change how you feel about something, it changes what you believe to be true about whatever that is. So that's it in a nutshell.
It's interesting. There's a circle that I often use that's similar to this, but you've identified a missing part of that, I think. In my circle, it's, and it can start at any point in this, but our beliefs determine what actions we take. The actions we take determine our circumstances, what happens to us. And the circumstances determine our beliefs. And that we can, if we want to make changes, we have to interrupt that at some point. I have a good friend who, like you, is an empath, and nearly everything I share, she says, well, what's missing from this, Tim, are the feelings. Mm-hmm. And I can see that that's what's missing from my model is the role that feelings play here.
Yeah, they play a really large part. Change how you feel about something and you change how you respond to that, whatever that is, from that point forward.
Nice. So can you give some examples? Of course you can. Would you please give some examples of some things that people have worked through and how this looks in real life?
Oh goodness, probably lots of them. Essentially, it's about what they're coming up against in life, a blockage in some way. They can't seem to get themselves past what's happening. That may be a bad relationship or a difficult relationship, because again, that's a matter of perspective. It may be financial situation where they find themselves unable to support themselves, or it may be a physical situation where, for example, someone has a lot of anger toward a parent or toward an organization or whatever, and they end up getting ulcers or physical problems because of it. So if you release that anger, release that feeling, you shift how you feel about that person or that organization, and you literally resolve how you respond to those situations in the future. And what previously caused you to become totally insane with anger or whatever, it just doesn't bother you anymore, and your physical self heals, clears up. So that, for me, that's the kind of the biggest area. Relationships is a huge area. Making peace with traumatic incidences, or it just goes on and on, quite literally.
Right.
As far as I think probably the biggest one is when people have been physically abused. That's, you know, what happened to me, essentially. I had a lot of anger, and a huge amount of anger, and it affected literally every part of my life. And it was only when I started working on it and releasing my attachment to that anger that I could become peaceful, and more peaceful about my life and my relationships and everything, essentially. And then I started to accept myself just the way I was, and that too led to further changes in my life becoming a much happier person, able to enjoy myself more. And that's important. Enjoying yourself is important. It's not just about work or whatever. So in those areas, it's an expanding circle. As I help people deal with these particular issues, it makes them more peaceful. And in effect, it affects other people and my personal desires to have a much more peaceful world. I'd like to see an end to war, truthfully. And I'd like to see an end to people harming themselves or harming other people because of situations and circumstances that they were caught up in as children.
Right.
So that's it.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. Hurt people, hurt people.
Yeah, hurt people, hurt people. Yeah. That's right.
You've mentioned a couple times, Grant, the word attachment.
Yes.
And I think that's an interesting shift, is that we really tend to experience life as it's something that happens to us. But in truth, really, we form an attachment to it.
Yeah, yeah, we do. And I like Abraham and this whole idea of the law of attraction, because what you put your attention on is what you tend to draw into your life, situations, circumstances, and relationships, whatever. And as you have to be emotionally attached to those dramas to be able to put your attention on them and literally draw them into your life. And you can change your life by releasing your emotional attachment to whatever those situations, circumstances, or relationships are. So you want to change your life, and you want to change what you continually draw into your life or attract, then change the way you feel about things. When you change the way you feel about things, you change what you believe to be true about yourself, which is in turn reflected in what you attract to yourself. And, you know, people who walk around angry all the time at everything, what do they draw? Situations and circumstances that cause them to feel angry again, or to continue to feel angry. Or they lash out at other people. Oh, God, I could tell you stories about people that make their lives miserable because they can't seem to let go of that anger or that regret or that resentment or whatever.
Right.
You know? So that
can be a difficult one. I know, well, personally, some people where something... So I'm trying to think of a good example. For example, there's a case where, you know, this is now, of course, a middle-aged adult, and there was a situation where his grandparents, when they were alive, were a relative systematically stole everything from them.
Yeah.
And that is, and I hear what you're saying because I see it, you know, that clinging to that resentment, what a weight that is. And yet I can also understand when he says, you know, you don't understand, this is something I can never forgive, even though it's hurting him. And I think various people can find themselves in that situation. How do you work through this when, at least from the person's perspective, that they're being asked to forgive what they see as the unforgivable?
Well, the unforgivable, is that bringing you pleasure and enjoyment of life? You know, you have to ask yourself at some point, do I want to continue living, feeling this way, and having the results of this deep anger and resentment? You know, some people, well, it's their life, and you get to choose how you continue. But personally, I want to be happy. I want to have positive things happen in my life rather than keep attracting situations and circumstances and relationships that cause me to feel more of the same. I don't want to live that way. And again, it does come down to a personal choice. Do I want to let this go or do I want to keep it, essentially?
Yeah. You use the word resentment as well. I know that people who have been through 12-step programs, that's often referred to as resentment as the number one offender.
Yes.
And in a 12-step program is, you know, what's the, who or what are you resentful towards? What's the cause? What is it affecting in you? What area of life? And as well as, did you have any part in this at all? So it's not simply happening to us. And then, so, I know something that is, I think, really interesting, which is what's going on for the other person. That you know, that people who are hurting people are sick in a sense, and you know, we don't treat sick people meanly. We treat them with kindness and understanding.
And compassion, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And to make that shift to, instead of like, I can't believe this person did this to me, shifting to understanding that that this is a person in need of healing themselves.
Well, yeah, I agree. People who hurt other people unconsciously or knowingly are really acting out a pattern of behavior that doesn't bring them any joy, I don't believe. It just expands the circle of I don't know what to call it, pain, of suffering for everybody. And coming from my perspective, I want to reduce the number of people on this planet that are in pain. And I want to be able to live a happy life, a fulfilled life, and enjoy myself rather than always having to look over my shoulder or be worried that somebody's trying to steal from me or that someone will run me over with a car because of the color of my skin or, oh, God, it goes on and on and on. I don't want to live that way, really.
Right. Agreed.
And these are not pleasant thoughts, things to think about, but, you know, if you want to live in peace, first you have to resolve the issues inside yourself. And then from that place of resolving those issues, then you find that your life settles down, becomes more peaceful, and then you want to help other people do what you've done, which is to resolve those particular issues and circumstances that caused you to, that may have caused you to harm other people. Payback, I suppose, but it's not payback of suffering, it's a payback of healing. If that makes sense.
It does. So while at first may seem that, well, why should I have to be the one who do this? actually you can be the one who starts the circle of healing.
Yeah. And you have to be the one, in essence, because if you don't heal yourself, who's going to do it for you?
Right.
If you don't set out on that path to heal yourself of this pain and suffering, who's going to do it for you? Because you don't... it has to start somewhere. Be the person that you want to become. I think it was Mahatma Gandhi said something. Be the change that you want to see. That's right. Be the change that you want to see in the world. And you have to do that first. You have to make the choice, make the decision to be that first. And then things will follow along from there, and situations and circumstances and opportunities to do exactly that will come to you.
Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say that the biggest beneficiary of peace is the person who recognizes that they are the biggest sinner, I suppose, if you want to put it that way. You know, you have to start somewhere.
Right. And you're like, what's my part in all this?
Yeah. And you clear your part in all this, and then suddenly, by extension and by law of attraction, you become the agent of change for other people as well. That's why I do what I do.
I can tell you, Grant, that I learned a lot about myself when a mentor urged me to, before I worried about all the things that I was worried about around me, just why don't you just clean your side of the street first?
Yeah, there's it. That's it.
And the beautiful thing about that is you realize that it's going to be a long time before my side of the street is clean.
I don't know if it ever ends, Tim.
Yeah.
We keep growing. Goodness.
Right. Exactly. Interesting. So, a couple different places we've alerted to, more than personal peace. There's certainly folks, there's a lot of things going on in the world. Someone in an interview, I was interviewed for another program yesterday, asked me about, my path to peace in these troubled times. And so how could we use these ideas, Grant, to help more the communal, national, global sense of peace?
Well, I think, first of all, when you work on yourself, which you've chosen that path to do that. I've chosen that path, and millions of others have chosen that particular way as well. Heal the darkness in yourself also shines a light for your neighbor. And when people see that there is a possibility that you can become more than you were before, when they see the neighbor become more peaceful and helping and gracious and open, loving, they say, I want some of that too, And it's all done by example. You can't force another person to change. That doesn't work. You can't force them to become peaceful, because that's like me standing up and saying, I'm better than you are. Look at me, Goodness, I'm more peaceful than you are, so I must be better than you. That's not the way it works. Heal yourself first, and then by example, other people want to do the same for themselves.
It's really interesting. You made me think of a couple of stories that might be relevant here. I have a friend who's a business coach who actually started working with bands, of all things.
With what?
With bands, musical groups.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. And the way that happened was that in the city where he works, a lead singer attended one of his events and asked him to work with him. And a few months later, the
the band members keep going, oh man, you're on fire. You're really, you know, like, and then finally they said, something's different about you. What's going on? And when he told them, they're like, well, do you think he would work with the rest of us? Because they liked the change. And this actually grew to the point where the various agents and booking folks would not take on a new band unless they worked with this guy.
Really?
And it was all from just what you said. Wow, I want some of that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you're right, it's not about, money's a lovely thing to have, but having lots of money doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to enjoy your life. It's about something more. It's about something intangible, about finding the place where, and living your life from that place where it's just enjoyable to get up every day. And that's infectious, you know? It's infectious. So I want more of that. If I see somebody who's at peace with themselves and they're confident, and their eyes are shining, and they just have a good feeling about everyone they meet, I say to myself, boy, I'd like some of that too, you know? Especially if I'm unhappy about things. Especially if I'm being put down or being bullied, or if I'm not feeling well about life itself. Yeah, I want more of feeling good about things, about enjoying myself. And for me, that's what it's about.
The other story I was thinking of is for listeners, that before we recorded this interview, Grant actually took me through his process, and that recording will be here as well. And I chose to work on resistance. So, you know, it's not natural for me to pick up the phone and to initiate contact with people, or to walk in to a networking event and so forth. And, you know, my initial response is, well, they're not really going to be interested. So, so Grant, worked through this and you'll with me, and you'll hear the process. But, the interesting thing is that, what you said about healing yourself first, you know, anyone who has ever, run their own business knows that it's going to be a long process of working on yourself. Mm-hmm. And I was sharing this difficulty with networking, Grant, with a colleague who said, really? I said, what do you mean? She goes, I see you like going into these places and soaring. You are so good at that. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, in my head, I'm struggling. And it all comes from you know, the working on myself part.
What you believe to be true about yourself is what it is. And the beliefs that you formed about who you are, and you saw yourself in a different way than perhaps other people see you. And once you change what you believe to be true about yourself, where you can accept yourself and literally enjoy yourself more, you don't have that problem about presenting yourself to others anymore.
And I love this phrase that you use, and we often think about enjoying life, but you keep saying about enjoying yourself. I love it. I just love it.
Well, isn't that what life's about? Is you know, I watched something recently about the Buddha, and he... his idea was to reduce suffering, and the suffering we cause it's self-caused. It's done by us according to what we believe to be true about ourselves. So when we change that, what we believe to be true about ourselves, we don't have to suffer so much, essentially. And life is about enjoying ourselves. It's not about pleasure. It's about enjoying what you do, taking pleasure per se in the enjoyment of life, whatever that is. Now, maybe I need to look at things in a different way. I don't know, but that seems to work for me.
But it's like the saying, I think, that you know, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional.
Yeah, there it is, right there. That's it, exactly. And there is a frequency to suffering, and that we and certain beliefs that we've built around that we have to suffer. What is it? Oh, I can't remember the saying. We pass these beliefs down that are necessary. You know, suffering is necessary to learn. It's necessary to suffer to get ahead in life. It's necessary to, oh, goodness. But these are all just beliefs. Change how you feel about things. You change what you believe to be true. I don't want to suffer anymore, truthfully.
Right.
I want to let that go.
You know, you and I, before the call, were talking earlier about energy and frequencies. I often talk to people about abundance as an energy, and that
yes.
abundance means far more than simply prosperity, but abundance is not only prosperity is flowing, but health is flowing, love is
yes.
flowing,
yes.
community is flowing. That all these things aren't separate aspects, but it all happens together. And if you read many of the things that both spiritual and some of the spiritually oriented business people write, you know, from Abraham to Napoleon Hill to Charles Sandel, and they all of them say that when you finally get it, it happens fast.
Yeah.
You know, it's all at once, and you wonder what was ever the difficulty. And it's because these are not separate things, but it's one flow, one energy.
Well, yes, absolutely. It's having an abundance of joy. I like that idea. Having an abundance of the things you want when you need them. It's not about having a huge storehouse of gold sitting in the back, being buried in the backyard, although maybe some people would get pleasure with that. But it's about having the things that you want when you're ready to enjoy them or can enjoy them. An abundance of positive, loving relationships, an abundance of good health so you can get out there and do what you want to do when you want to do it. An abundance of joy, an abundance of life itself. And what is life? Life is the energy to do and have and be what you want to do and have and be without harming anyone else, just enjoying, simply enjoying.
I often compare this to, it's not that this bank account or that bank account would make me happy, that, you know, when I go hiking, I don't want a certain number of leaves on the tree. I want trees and leaves everywhere I look. I don't want a certain
yeah.
number of stars in the sky. I want stars everywhere I look. I want birds everywhere I look. There's just this constant flow. I don't even know how many there are. I don't even care how many there are.
No.
Just that it's there and can be tapped into at any point.
Well, yes. Whatever you see, you can appreciate. Maybe that's a good word to call it. It's the energy and frequency of appreciation. It causes you to feel good about life itself. And you can appreciate whatever that is and feel good about it, because that's what it's about. At least for me, it's about appreciating whatever that is, being thankful, being grateful that you are in that moment and can appreciate it, not being filled with suffering and doubt and worry and concern and how am I going to make my next bills and, ooh, goodness, that doesn't appeal to me at all. No.
You know, my dad likes to say, what if you woke up tomorrow and you only had the things you were grateful for today?
Ooh, that'd be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, this is interesting, Grant. One of the things that, you know, because there are things that we feel bad about tend to come forefront, whether that's an evolutionary response, whether it's attachment or ego, whatever the reason. I often talk to people who are saying, well, everything is going wrong in my life. And before I work with them through that, the first thing I say to them is, well, let's talk about that, because it's probably not true.
Yeah.
You know, many yeah. things are maybe going awry, but there are also things that are going just fine.
Yep. And you're not putting your attention on those.
That's right. And the same thing in the world. There are many things that are out of balance in the world, but most of the world is at peace despite all those problems.
Yes.
Most people are good, honest, you know, living their lives despite challenges elsewhere. And that's not to dismiss the work or the important things elsewhere, but it's you know, we can get out of balance in our own perspective.
Totally, I totally agree with that. Yeah, and in effect, what our job in helping people turn things around is shifting your focus away from those things that make you feel bad to those things that make you appreciate life, essentially. And if all you could do in life is help people do that, you'd be performing a service to this planet like, I don't know, I can't describe it. But that's what it's about, helping people shift their focus away from the things that bug them and upset them and make them feel bad about themselves and feel bad about life to feeling good about themselves and feeling good about what they already have.
Why do you think, Grant, that we have such an attachment to the negative aspects?
Well, I think that's a prevailing energy that's been passed along to us. It's a belief that you have to be careful, a belief that things aren't good. Life is constantly trying to take you down. These are beliefs, again, just ways of looking at life. And I think these are stories that we've been told by previous generations that have played themselves out, and that, for example, we're told to be careful with your money. Well, that's not a bad idea, be careful with your money. But be careful to the extent that you're parsimonious and you won't spend a nickel and you won't help a neighbor who's in need, or you won't do this because you're taught to be careful with your money. And you can't be generous and be helpful. You can't do any of these things because if you do, you're putting yourself at risk. Oh, golly. You know, those stories of disaster are passed down, and I don't think they were intentionally meant to cause people to draw in upon themselves and stop enjoying life itself. And I think that's what we have to move past, and that's the energy we're moving into is one of expansion rather than that continual contraction and fear. I can't think of a worse way to live but to live in fear, and that's what those stories do. Those things have been passed along. Be afraid, you know, be fearful, be concerned, be worried, and I don't want to live that way.
I forgot who said this, but I love the quote, that worry is a misuse of the imagination.
Exactly the truth. That's right. Now, is worry... well, let's put it this way. Do you have to trust... No, I don't have a way of saying this. Goodness. If you trusted in God or your version of God, whatever that happens to be, to always provide the things that you need by allowing the energy of the creative forces in the world, and there are creative forces, allow them their due. Appreciate the beauty of life, appreciate the beauty of growth, appreciate the and again, I'm running out of words on this. Can you jump in and help me with this? What can you appreciate that will cause an expansion in your life, an expansion of enjoyment and allowing yourself to have pleasure, to appreciate, to be grateful for your days, for your hours, and for your minutes, and to be grateful for the things that you already have rather than be worried and concerned that it's going to be taken away from you? Goodness.
Well, I can share two. One is actually goes back to a very dark time. I don't remember if we've ever talked about this, but it's not a big secret that years ago I drank away a decade of my life. And I remember the early Abraham teachings coming out of that. And one of them was, you know, what here, find something you can appreciate, even if it's just, oh, I like that shade of blue over there. And it sounds so ridiculous. Everything is going terribly, and I feel awful, and nobody understands, and look at how all these people are asking. But, hey, I like that shade of blue over there. But, you know, every time I had the presence of mind to do that, things shifted.
Yeah.
And in amazing ways that at first I just said, well, that's just a coincidence. And finally I said, well, it's not coincidence if it continually happens, you know. Two good friends would walk in 2 minutes later, things like this. Or, you know, I said, oh, I'm lost, you know, what do I do? And then I'd look up and there would be a big sign, 50% off all maps. You know, that kind of thing would happen frequently.
Yes. Change how you, what you feel about something, change it from worry and concern to allowing appreciation and love, and you change your life, essentially. And do that enough, do that every day and with every step, and your life becomes totally different. Totally. And fear is the worst thing, absolutely the worst thing that you can allow into your life. And as soon as you can release your attachment to it and all the things that you're afraid of happening, I have an ex-wife that she's actually a very good friend. And she says, when you face your bear, when you face the thing you're most afraid of and face it head on, and you'll find that what happens is it just kind of shrinks away to nothing. It was only a thought or a belief or an attitude. It's not real. It's fear. What's the acronym for fear? Oh goodness!
Face everything
at this moment,
face everything. No, I can't remember it.
No, I can't remember it either. It's not important, I suppose.
Right.
But when you face it, it just, what you were most afraid of, it drops away. And you say, oh, that was, I don't know, why was I ever afraid of that? Essentially.
Right.
So face it. Stand up to it. You don't have to beat it up, because it's about facing it, looking at it head on. What am I afraid of here, really? It's not real. False evidence appearing real. There it is. False evidence appearing real. Because it's not real. Fear is not real. We're just afraid it is.
Right.
So face it.
So face
Stand
everything
up.
And recover.
Yeah, there it is. That's another good one. Face everything and recover. And it's sometimes hard for people to do that. But until you do, you can't enjoy life. You just can't.
Here's the other appreciation thing I was thinking of. That's why I brought up the alcohol incident, was the period, was that one of the things that might sound odd that I'm grateful for today is when I'm in pain. Because there was a time when if there was pain, I had no idea. Am I hungry? Am I sick? Am I just going through something? Did I not get enough sleep? I honestly didn't know there were too many things going on. And today, when things aren't, quote, going right, unquote, one of the things I truly appreciate is that I can feel those things today. And I'm clear about what I'm feeling. And that is itself something to be grateful for.
It is something to be grateful for, yes.
No. And even if that right now I feel hurt and I feel sad, but I can feel it.
Yeah, that's it. And you'll get over it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I don't know if I mentioned this, but I almost died about, let's see, in February 2016. I went in for a I was down in Peru for a time. I was crawling around the mountains and doing some teaching at a couple of the universities. And on my return to Canada, I went for a routine checkup, and I found out that I had some blocked arteries, and one of my heart valves needed to be replaced, and a few other things. There were four procedures that they had to do, and I quite literally died on the operating table for a time. And the surgeon came and told me about this, and what I was doing was essentially, I think the reason for this was that anger that I had carried around for so many years. It had degraded my heart, and that's my explanation of it. But my ability to open myself fully to love, first of all myself, and to allow myself to love other people in a fuller, richer way. And so the physical manifestation of that was the heart issue. And I know that after I had that operation where I almost died, I don't remember the near-death experience, but just parts of my mind do. I changed, and I opened up. It was like that operation opened me up to feelings in a way that I wasn't open before. My head understood feelings, but my heart didn't, and it needed a way to be unclogged, as it were. And after that, it was a strange thing happened. I continued my work because I love doing what I'm doing. But what happened was that I was able to tap into people's emotions and feelings from, like, I could be on a Skype call to someone in Japan, and I could feel what they were feeling in their body, quite literally. And you may have experienced that during the call we did, or the session we did today. And it helped me to really take my work in a much more powerful way, better direction, in essence, and become better at what I do. But again, allowing yourself to feel fully and experiencing that feeling and having no fear of allowing yourself to do that makes a huge difference in your life. And I think we use alcohol and drugs as a way of dampening down those feelings because we don't know how to deal with them. Would you agree with that?
I definitely would agree with that.
Yeah. And feeling is connected to all aspects of our lives. And to come at things from strictly a head perspective or thoughts, it takes the richness away from life like, I can't explain it. And that's when I really started to live, after I had that operation and came out and putting myself in the position of other people, allowing myself to really feel what they feel. And it's made all the difference in the world. But it's not easy at times too. So,
right, because it takes the focus off ourselves and directs it back out to the world doesn't revolve around me.
That's a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That was a revelation that I realized that.
Yeah.
I was always worried about what other people thought of me.
Yeah.
And then one day I realized other people didn't think about me all that much.
If at all, sometimes.
Their own right.
That's right. They're worried about themselves and how other people think about them. It's an endless circle, isn't it? Yeah. So life is always fascinating. It's always interesting. And it's always rich. It may not be rich in the ways that we would like sometimes, but it's rich, and certainly it's wonderful, and I want more of it, truthfully.
I would like to share a story that I think may speak to, and I can easily picture somebody listening to this and say, well, that's all great for Grant and Tim. This is what they do all the time. Of course, they're good at it, but it doesn't really apply to me. or, you know, maybe the long-term changes over time and so forth. But I started life as a professional musician, and I was, you know, I did not come from money, so I was very much the starving artist, and I survived mainly by working continually. Mm-hmm. And I, surprise, surprise, got totally burnt out, and was in a place that I just can't do this, and seriously withdrew for everything. I was going to totally quit, sell everything, start fresh. I tried, it didn't work. That was what was in my head. And just when that happened, the symphony called and said, we need somebody to come and play Stravinsky Symphony Psalms with us tonight. And I really was fed up, but I needed the money very badly. So
yeah.
Of course I said yes. But it was interesting that instead of my usual constant worry about, oh man, am I going to make a mistake? What is everybody going to think? I went in not with the most positive attitudes. I had a chip on my shoulder, which is basically, look, I'm going to do, you know, I've been working on this a long, long time, and I'm going to play my absolute best. And if somebody doesn't like it, screw them.
Yeah.
You come play. And suddenly, I was so confident and so competent. And I played so well, like an immediate jump to a new level of playing. And I was damn good, because this is what I did all day, every day. I immediately jumped to an entirely new level of playing, at which I was totally confident, totally competent. And I left that performance coming home going, I don't know what just happened here, but something happened I need to pay attention to.
Yeah.
It was just that shift in focus that not only changed how I felt, but it literally changed my abilities in a day.
It changed the way you blocked your abilities.
Exactly. Well said.
Yeah.
And
once I focused on doing
my job and stopped worrying about what everybody else is doing,
yeah,
did fine.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, life goes on, and sometimes when you come to that point where you say, I don't give a darn anymore about how people think about me, or maybe I do, but I'm not going to let it be so all-encompassingly important. And if I look bad, oh, well, c'est la vie, you know, that's too bad. That's life. And you let go of that worry and concern about how other people are thinking about you, judging you. But the interesting thing is that you quite literally stop judging yourself as well, don't you?
Yes.
And that seems to make a big difference, and that judgment factor, judging how you come off against other people.
Right.
And then you're more willing to give the other guy a hand up, aren't you?
And that's frankly at a professional level. I don't know how others necessarily do it, but that's exactly how I had a career, which is, and I played with many remarkable organizations, but it was exactly that. In the practice room, no, fix that, fix that. No, that's not good. Work on this, fix that.
Yeah.
And on stage, nobody does it better.
Yeah.
You think you could be better, come on up.
Yeah, here, take my horn. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a difficult thing to always be trying to be in competition with everybody else for everything. It's very tiring. Really, it's very tiring, and you have to be better than the next guy, because no thanks, I'd rather not.
Well, there's another key change. I love how this is making me think about all the thoughts and beliefs that govern things, because I had moved on to other things, and I still played, and I still do play for fun, and people will ask me to do benefits from time to time, and a friend of mine asked me to do a benefit, and I said I'd be happy to. Then later we were talking, I said, I'm a little bit worried, because about what? This is why I haven't been playing, and, you know, so I, my, I'm rusty. My chops aren't really up to performance level. And he looked me in the eye and said, Tim, they want to like you. That's why they come.
Hmm.
I thought, yeah. Nobody said they're going, I don't know, you think he's good enough? No, their default is, this is going to be good. Let's just enjoy it. And
yeah.
And it really freed me up to just have fun. And it was just that shift in beliefs.
Yeah. When you try to be the best at something, I don't know that you can be the best.
Right.
You have to. It has to come from a place of enjoyment, or has to come from a place where I really would like to help that guy or help that woman be her best. And then the pleasure is in helping her be her best, and you can participate in that enjoyment.
I call it the Chuck Mangione factor. I was always bugged by this because he was one of my favorites. But, you know, I'm listening to it. He's not even close to being one of the best trumpet players.
No.
So what is it? And one day it hit me all of a sudden. He's the best Chuck Mangione there is.
Yeah, that's right. Chuck Mangione, by the way.
Yeah, me too. And so, yeah. How I need to be the best Tim there is. That's all it is.
And that it changes from day to day. Being the best who you are, because it's who you are. Some days you're not going to be the best of anything, but you're going to enjoy the heck out of the day anyway, you know?
Right. And today, sometimes I work with coaching other people who are putting together alternative health businesses and helping them address those challenges and get flourishing. And I share this with them as well. If they're worried about competition, I tell them, look, if you're worried about competition, you aren't yet clear on what it is you do.
Yeah.
That no one else does.
That no one else does. And no one can do what you do like you.
Right.
It may sound similar, and the notes may come out very much the same, but you put your particular essence into that performance that no one else can match, even the bad
ones. Jerry Garcia said, it's not enough to be the best at what you do. You have to be perceived as being the only one who does it.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's really something. Life is something. And recently I realized that we're in a period of massive change where people are opening up to themselves. And if you have that attitude that you have to be better than everybody else at whatever you do, then you're letting yourself in for a huge disappointment. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to enjoy myself. Truthfully, I want to wake up and see, I want to hear the birds sing in the morning and enjoy those birds sing. I want to see smiling faces, children who are smiling and losing themselves in their play, and the big smiles on their faces. That to me gives me pleasure. To be myself, that's all, just to be me. That's what I want. And I like helping people, by the way. So that works
right,
out.
Right, right.
That's right.
One of the things that I will help people with then to identify something that needs to be worked on is that of all the many voices in our heads, there are three particularly loud ones. The voice of reason, the voice of intuition, and the voice of fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, roughly head, heart, and gut. If reason is telling us, yeah, this is a good idea, and if our intuition is telling us, yeah, this is a good idea, and fear is telling us, whoa, hang on, then the rule of thumb is whatever the combination is, majority rules. So if two out of three says do it, the third voice is not the voice of caution. It's blockage. There's something you're resisting that needs to be worked on.
It takes courage to be yourself. It takes courage to put yourself out there. And of all the emotions in the world, I think courage is probably the most valuable. Courage. Courage to be, to stink at something, but do it anyway because you love to do it.
Yeah.
Or to wake up in a bad mood and you don't know why you feel bad, but you get out there and do it anyway. That's courage. Courage is important.
That's well said. That's how I started my healing business, Grant. I don't think I've ever shared that with anyone before. Just, what will people think? And it's like, well, people need somebody to stand up in front and say, this can be done. Here's how.
Yeah.
And if you stand up, others will stand up too.
That's it. That's it totally. Even if you stink at something at the start, that you have this call to do something, you do it anyway. You stand up and you override your fear and let it go. That's facing your bear. You know, that thing that you think is going to rip you apart with the big claws and the big teeth, do it anyway. Do it anyway. Goodness.
So this is a nice segue that, so Grant asked me about if we could do a session together and to show what it is he did and how he does it. And he asked me what I would want to work on. And I had the perfect thing that I think many people can relate to, which is that when I go into, for example, a networking event, I never just go, hey, I'm here to network and this will be great. There's this voice in my head that always says, why are you even here? Nobody's interested. These are not the right people. You know, they're not going to care. And yeah. I have evidence every single time that's never true. People are always interested. I make new connections. I pick up new clients. I discover new ways to work. It's always beneficial. And yet every single time, even though reason tells me that it all works out, there's always that voice in my head telling me this is pointless. Don't do it. Don't even go in. And the only reason I do it is that, I have my my marketing coach's voice in my head that tells me, not really true. Do you know that? Is any of this even true? And so I go, no, it's really not. And then I literally force myself, but it's always a forcing. And so I'm sure that there are many areas where people have resistance. And so that's what Grant worked on with me, is working through, let's find out where that resistance is coming from. And shrink it and eliminate that. So it was an amazing session, and I thank you for that, Grant.
And let me ask you, that was coming from your childhood, wasn't it?
It was.
That voice. And that's the way it is for most of us. It's coming from things that we learned when we were very young and that stuck with us.
And I hear that a lot. People say, well, yeah, this goes back to my childhood. And they say it as if, and therefore, it can never be dealt with.
Mm.
It's a childhood thing, and so that's the way it is.
Well, guess what? It can, because there's no such thing as time. Really, time is an invention. Yeah, and we have a memory. Yeah,
yeah. We actually have beliefs about time as well. You know, as George Lakoff pointed out, we have a banking metaphor for time. We save time, we spend time, we invest time, we waste time, as if we had a little time account somewhere.
Well, what if it was time to live? What if it was time to live?
Yeah.
Cool.
Beautiful. I can't think of any better place to wind up. What if it were time to live?
Thank you for doing this with me, and me doing this with you. It's been a bit of a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful chat, and I can
well,
see many ways that might be beneficial. Go ahead.
If I can ever be of assistance to you, you just keep my phone number. You just give me a call.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And same, same. Any way I can help, let me know.
Thank you.
For folks who want to learn more about Grant, you can check out his website, which is www.acceptingself.com. That's, I'm assuming that's acceptingself.com. Acceptingself.com. Grant, thank you so much. I appreciate
thank you, Tim.
Stuff.
Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Have a wonderful day. Okay. Wow. What an amazing call with Grant. I got so much on this call. This move, I don't even know where this car is all these amazing things. So Grant actually said he set it off himself looking at a program called Getting Free Fast. And he brought his computer program of consciousness to this and saw the subconscious as a program that could be activated. But the program was like complicated, so Grant used his own programming to come up with something much more simple. The way he described it, everything is stored in our subconscious. But we have these beliefs. So we believe what something is, and we don't believe in ourselves, and that creates blockage. So Grant continually stressed several themes. He kind of went a little bit in spiral here, and it was wonderful reminders. He really stressed that you can do anything you want to do. The only thing that we find difficult is because there's a feeling based on a belief that's not true. There's a feeling based on a belief that's not true. And if you change that feeling, you change the belief, and you change the circumstance. He talked a lot about attachment. Change the attachment to a belief, then the belief changes. And so Grant starts with feeling. You change the feeling. You change how this feels to you. You change that belief. So it's a matter of moving from limitation to expansion. So I had always thought about our beliefs govern our actions, which govern our circumstances, and our circumstances form our beliefs. But Grant really stressed the importance of starting from feelings. It's our feelings that bring all this into play. The feelings that fit what happens to you. I asked him about some case studies, and he really stressed, well, it comes down to blockages for folks in the relationship, or blockages in terms of a financial difficulty, or physical blockages, especially anger toward a person. Or an organization that can really manifest and alter and other diseases in this way. That that we need to, and in fact we can make peace with these situations, make peace with our traumas, make peace with our incidences. Grant himself suffered physical abuse when he was young, and this caused a tremendous amount of anger. It affected all parts of him. But when we can accept ourselves, then things change, and then we can be happier. And we can enjoy ourselves. This is, I've never heard someone really put this point home so often and so importantly. We often think about allowing ourselves to enjoy life. But Grant keeps talking about enjoying ourselves, enjoying yourself. And that when we do, it creates an expanding circle. This affects others. That this brings a peace to others. This can bring peace to the world, even. Overcoming things like war. Rather than the communists, which creates a different kind of circle. First people, but when we can interrupt that cycle, we step in. I asked Grant about the shared his affinity to the teachings of Abraham. That where we put our attention is where we're going to draw and attract. That when we can change that feeling, then we change a belief in our a belief about ourselves, and then that changes what we attract to that self. Anger, on the other hand, is a misunderstanding. You know, when people lash out, we have resentments that really sidesteps this whole purpose, whole positive chain. So, and I asked him about, you know, one thing I hear fairly commonly is people generally understand the concept of forgiveness, but how do you forgive the unforgivable? And I gave an example of someone who's you know, had a relative systematically steal from his grandparents, you know, and grandparents say, well, do you want to continue feeling like this? And he says, and you can, but we can work through that. And I asked him about the process of working through resentments, looking at the cause, what part of me is it affecting, what's my part in this, and, you know, what's going on for other people, you know, that to act in a negative way, that we wouldn't treat sick people unkindly, we would understand. And Grant's response, again, was the important thing is to resolve these issues in ourselves. If we focus on harm or payback, we're going to keep ourselves away from healing. We can heal ourselves, we can heal others, that we expand that circle. I think that often we can ask, you know, well, why do I have to be the one? Well, you know, it's like Gandhi says, it's be the change you want to see in the world. The biggest beneficiary of this will be the biggest sinner. But we ourselves have to be the agents of change and take that step forward. And we can. Even something that seems as maybe so large and difficult as bringing peace to our community, to the nations, to the globe, if we heal the darkness in ourselves, you create a light for your neighbor. You know, other people see that and they say, "I want that too. I want that too." So the real key, he says, is to heal yourself first, and to you know, to enjoy ourselves, to be able to get up every day in that joy. It's really about what you believe to be true about yourself. You can accept yourself, you can enjoy yourself. Grant pointed out, the Buddha pointed out that, you know, suffering is caused by us, you know, that, you know, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. I asked him why this happens. He says, well, you know, our culturally, we pass beliefs down. But if we change how we feel, we can change those beliefs. We talked a little bit about abundance being an inclusive thing that includes relationships, prosperity, health. And he added to that joy and life itself. So, we talked about appreciation. Appreciation, he reminds us, is what causes us to feel good. What are we thankful for? What are we grateful for? You know, as, like my dad says, what if you woke up tomorrow and you only had what you were grateful for today? It's a shift in perspective, that we can tend to think that, wow, everything is bad, but everything isn't bad. And so we can shift that focus to one of appreciation. So I asked him, like, why do we have such an attachment to negative things? And I said, well, it's passed along. There's a belief that we have to be careful, that life is trying to take you down, that you have to be careful with money. And all these things cause us to live in fear and worry. And, but it doesn't need to be that way. Like, worry is a misuse of the imagination. That we can trust in God, or whatever term we're confident of, that resonates with us there, to provide this energy of creation, of creative forces, that we can really appreciate the beauty of life's growth. The biggest enemy here is fear. We need to release our attachment to it. He reminded us that fear is an acronym for false expectations appearing real. And that we can shift that to face everything and recover. That, again, so that we have feelings and thoughts affecting our beliefs, and that affects our attitudes and our results. So, you know, we can, it's finding something to be grateful for, even if it seems small, even if it's for the ability to feel. Grant shared also that he almost died. He was enjoying the mountains and came back and found out he had blocked arteries and actually died on the table for a while. And he shared that this comes, he says, you know, from the anger that he had. And this experience really helped to open him up. His head understood, but his heart didn't. And that really resonates for me. It, probably for a lot of other people as well. After we can tap into our emotions and our feelings, then we can start to open up. Alcohol and drugs, Grant reminds us, these are ways of dampening feelings because we don't know how to deal with those. So when he changed how he lived, how he felt, what he felt, this led him to change his beliefs and to start enjoying life. We talked a little bit about you know, worrying always about what other people think about, and really people are really focused on themselves, about changing that belief about blockages. But stopping to worry about others judging us and to stop judging ourselves, to have fun with life. You know, to appreciate our own unique gifts, what we bring to the world that no one else does. To enjoy life, to get up with passion, to experience pleasure, and the joy of helping other people. So I got so much out of this. Towards the end, we're talking about, or Grant was talking about the courage to be yourself, that this is the most valuable feeling. But it takes real courage to be yourself, to stand up and to look at the things that are telling you, no, be careful, and to do it anyway. I know in Grant's session he did for me, he took me back to childhood beliefs that are standing in the way of resistance. And it was amazing work. Please give that a listen. I really appreciate his taking time to do that for me. And finally, Grant left us with this question about time. What if it were time to live? So, wow, that's really the measure right there. What if it were time to live? So just, I got so much out of this hour with Grant. I'm sure you did too. You can learn more about Grant at acceptingself.com, A-C-C-E-P-T-S-E-L-F, .com, acceptingself.com. I can't think of what to add to this. I love his message about living for today, and especially about enjoying ourselves. So I hope everyone finds things to appreciate about yourself. You take time to enjoy yourself today. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.